Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Cover Zero podcast, a show where I cover the least in the best way possible. I'm your host, Jason Wells. Today is Wednesday, April 2nd. We got more draft talk this time. This is going to be the My Guys episode. And what I mean by my guys, these aren't like the guys who I think are going to totally work out in the NFL or like the hidden gems later on that I think are really going to hit. There's a couple sprinkled in here and there, but these are just my guys, guys that I like, whether because of their football play or maybe stuff that happens off the field, maybe just their size and their athleticism in general, maybe just because of where they're from, I don't know, but again, these are my guys. Well, this is the episode. Going to do NFL weekly update. As always, coaches meetings happened. We have a lot to talk about rule change wise that's happening. Few bigger signings that I missed literally as I stopped recording last week. Seems to happen fairly frequently. We'll see if it happens again. It might, because Micah Parsons maybe contract. We'll talk about that in a bit, actually. And then, yeah, ending the episode with the worst hot take or worst sports NFL take that I've seen this week, and that comes at the hands of Hank Lockwood at Pardon My Take, so we'll get to his take at the end of the episode, but another good one, my guys in the NFL draft, NFL weekly update, and the worst NFL take of the week. Let's get into the episode. Gonna be a good one. So we'll start off with NFL weekly update as always. So yeah, I talked about it a little bit in the intro, but there's some rumors out there about Micah Parsons, and no, they're not those kind of rumors, don't get worried, but it was reported today by, Clarence Hill Jr., who's like a beat writer for Dallas, has been for a while, very well respected, whatever, and it was, the Cowboys are close or have offered Micah Parsons to be the highest paid non-QB in NFL history. And it's like, okay, so it looks like there could be some rumblings of a signing today. And then it got brought out that the Cowboys did all of the negotiations without Micah's agent, David Mulgeta, without him being in the room. So turns out they haven't really negotiated with anything. They just think that we have a deal and Mike is going to say yes because we're the Dallas Cowboys in classic Jerry fashion. And speaking of Jerry Jones, to just make matters worse, he then kind of disrespected David Mulgeta, again, one of the biggest NFL agents, head of one of the biggest sports agencies that the NFL uses, and basically said, like, I don't know his name, I don't know, like, doesn't matter to me. And it's like, again, that's your guy's agent. That's who you're trying to sign. You're only making this harder on yourself. And then Micah has to come back and defend his guy to be like, yeah, of course he's not. I'm not signing anything without my agent reading it over. That's fucking crazy. This is just another Jerry Jones getting in his way. And I'm sure that the Cowboys gave him an offer that would make him the highest paid non-QB in NFL history, but I'm sure it's also a longer deal than a 3-4 year deal, so he could hit the open market again. I'm sure there's probably some hidden clauses in there that an agent or a lawyer would, you know, be able to look at that. And Jerry Jones, again, another just dumb comment, but he said, I don't view this deal as urgent at all. I'd rather pay more and get it right. I thank the heavens, thank the stars, whatever, that although my team, the Dolphins suck. The Dolphins, again, since I've been a fan, they have been bad. They have not given me a ton of joy. It is what it is. It's the life of lowly NFL fans. I get it. But I can't imagine being a Cowboys fan and seeing an 82-year-old senile man be the GM of my team just because he has all the money, just because he's the owner, and to do negotiations like that where it's like, yeah, the Micah Parsons deal, it's fine. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. I'm fine if I have to pay millions of dollars more instead of just, you know, getting it done early and still getting it right. Because Micah, that deal could have been done before Max Crosby got paid. And definitely before the Miles... Actually, why did I even bring up Max Crosby? Definitely before Miles Garrett. And now, I think there's a decent chance that the Lions get Aiden Hutchinson's deal done before Micah Parsons gets his deal. And that would be absolutely insane to me. But again, Jerry Jones is an idiot. I say it almost every episode now. Jerry Jones is an idiot. I feel bad for Cowboys fans. We can move on because it's kind of a story, non-story, but it's just another view into the mind of Jerry Jones and how not to run a professional football team. Next note up here, we have an actual signing. Stephon Diggs is back in the AFC East. He signs a 3-year, $69 million deal. You heard that right, with the New England Patriots. Obviously, initial thoughts were, why are the Patriots paying him so much? That's absolutely crazy. And obviously, the structure of the contract and the guarantees come out. Mostly incentive-based contract for this season, only $16 million guaranteed. It's a one-year deal. The other 2 years, the numbers, it can look flashy. It's a one-year deal, 16 of that guaranteed, with some incentive kickers at the end. It's probably just going to end up being a one-year deal, but what it means for the Patriots, I think this is a great thing that they needed to do. I don't think Stephon Diggs is the Stephon Diggs we will see those last few years in Baltimore. He is in his 30s now. He is coming off a major knee injury with his ACL. Do I still think he's a good NFL receiver? Of course I still do. But why this is a big win for New England is because, one, you had the money to spend. Go get a receiver. It cannot be Pop Douglas and Kendrick Bourne and maybe hoping that Jalen Polk and Javon Baker turn into something. At least with Diggs, not knowing what he actually is going to be, he's better than those four guys that I just named. I can say that definitively. And it gives Drake May someone to throw to. Like, thank God Drake May has someone to throw to now. We'll leave it at that, kind of. Like, it's good that Drake May has seemingly a guy, at least on paper. Does this change anything in my grand scope of how I view the Patriots going into this year? No, absolutely not at all. That defense, I think that defense will be above average. The Patriots in general, that offense, boom, you got Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs, again, I don't think he's that great anymore, especially coming off an ACL injury. We'll see, but you got Stephon Diggs. You got Drake May throwing to Diggs, which may or may not be that good. You got a bunch of question marks everywhere else on that offense. The offensive line still looks bad. The running game still looks bad. The receivers and weapons outside of Diggs, and even you can include Diggs, still don't look great. I think the only way that my perception of the Patriots can change going into next season is if they draft Travis Hunter, and I just don't think that's going to happen, but save that for the Vault episode. I'm going to keep hinting at that. But again, good signing for the Patriots just to get an actual receiver in the building. But I don't really think it changes anything. Russell Wilson, one-year deal with the New York Giants up to $21 million. I think 10 of that's guaranteed. So I already kind of talked about the Giants hypothetically signing Russ, and I think that they should because I don't like Shador. And look at that. They did it. I know things. I'd be a pretty good NFL GM. I honestly think that I probably would be. I don't think that the job's all that difficult. It obviously is, but whatever. I digress. Rest of the Giants, it is what it is. I think that this should mean that the Giants aren't taking a quarterback. There's been lots of reports that, oh, of course, a quarterback is still in play at three. I think that's ridiculous. I think that it should be Travis Hunter. And if Travis Hunter gets taken at two by the Browns, then it should be Abdul Carter. But again, maybe try and trade back, but everyone wants to trade back in this draft. I don't think Russ does anything. Again, you heard it last week. I think Jameis is the better QB than Russ. I think that both QBs are going into camp and will get the chance to compete. I don't think that just because Russ signed for more money means he's going to get that. Again, a lot of that 21 mil is incentives. I don't think he's going to get it. And again, Russ at this point, it's, again, maybe future Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, like, I think he's probably made some all pros. Either way, like, the pedigree is there and why you have to overpay for a Russ instead of a guy like Jameis. But I think Jameis is just flat out the better QB now, and we'll see how that QB battle plays out, because that's who the QB battle will be between, is those two guys. Forget Tommy DeVito. It's those. Forget any rookie quarterback. I mean, like, maybe if we're talking about, like, oh, Tyler Shoak in the third round or something, like, maybe he comes in and can compete. I have no idea, but, like, they're not taking Shador at three, I can tell you that. And what that means for Aaron Rodgers, because now the Giants are out of the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes. Yeah, Rodgers is just still not signing. It's basically Steelers or bust at this point, and the Steelers know it's them or bust. But either way, there's been... He just hasn't signed yet because he does everything on his own terms and his own way, and you just gotta roll with the punches, I guess. If I'm the Steelers, I'd be worried, because I thought up a hypothetical of Russ going to the Steelers brass and being like, not Russ, Rodgers going to the Steelers brass and essentially being like, I'll sign with you guys, but I will sign with you guys after the draft and when you don't draft any rookie QBs. I don't think that that's that crazy of a demand for someone like Rodgers to make. And not in the sense like, oh, I think that's a reasonable demand for him to make. I think that Rodgers is that type of delusional, self-interested person that would make a type of demand because he's like, I'm Aaron fucking Rodgers. And I think the Steelers are going to cave to that. And the other part of my hypothetical is I see Shador sliding. I said he's not going to be a top 10 pick. Yeah. I think there's a scenario where Shador might be available at the Steelers pick at 21, I believe. And if they pass on him for just the chance of signing Aaron Rodgers, it would be funny. Now, I don't think Shador would be a great pick there, but like, QB is such a need where the Steelers fan base would be losing their mind. Now, again, I don't think Shador is that great. I think rolling with the year of Aaron Rodgers would probably be better, but just, I don't know. I like that made-up hypothetical in my head, but Rodgers' watch is still on and ongoing. We'll see what happens with it. The Bills extend Christian Benford to a 4-year, $76 million deal, putting him right around that 19 mil AAV. It's a really good contract. The Bills just continue to keep their own drafted talent in-house and at very good prices. Benford is a borderline top 10 corner. And I know that's probably a little, like, whoa for some people. I don't think he'd be included in my top 10, but you can make the case and people will argue that he's a top 10 corner in the league. And he got paid like he should be, but where the discount part comes in is J.C. Horn just got, what was it, $25 million a year. I think that him and Benford are almost in that same tier. Like, the gap of the $6 million difference in AAV is crazy to me. And that's why I think, again, Brandon Bean keeping his guys, all of them. And it starts at the top. Josh Allen taking a pay cut and being like, no, I want to win. And all of these guys, again, they're getting paid like 19, 20 million, whatever dollars a year. They're for the team. They're for the Bills. They want to get this team a Super Bowl. And it's kind of refreshing to see. Obviously, if the Pegulas are just, I think the Pegulas still own the Bills, but if they're the owners or whatever, just pocketing the money and not investing back into the Bills, and I can't even say that because they're building a brand new fucking stadium right next door. The Bills are just doing things right. And hopefully, maybe that'll amount to an actual Super Bowl win, or at least a Super Bowl appearance at this point. But the Bills being able to get all of their guys to take discounts this offseason has been huge, especially with the cap going up, especially with the way things are going. Big win for the Bills. Big win for Brandon Bean. Next note here, Jawan Bentley has been cut by the Patriots. Unfortunate, Bentley is, again, as someone who has to play against him two times a year, Bentley's been awesome. Bentley is a huge old style thumper of a linebacker. I think he's like 6'4", 250. Like, he's a big dude. Downhill linebacker, meet you in the hole, put you on your ass type dude. And just kind of doesn't fit what the Patriots now want to run. They obviously bring in Robert Spillane. They brought in another guy too, who probably, I think Jack Gibbons or something, who was on the Titans last year, was a UDFA from Vrabel. And I think the Patriots need to address the linebacker spot other than just Spillane, but it's clearly Bentley doesn't fit what they want to do. He'll find a home after the draft. I'm sure of it anyways, but yeah. Very productive team captain for the Patriots. Had an injury last year that kept him out for the majority of the season. But yeah, if you want a run-stuffing old-school linebacker, Juwan Bentley is the guy for you. Next note here, EJ Speed, another linebacker. So EJ Speed of the Colts. Big bit of a breakout year for him this year. Signs a one-year, $5 million deal with the Texans. I'm a little confused why the Colts couldn't match a one-year, $5 million deal to just kind of keep him. But D'Amico Ryans just gets another young, athletic linebacker for his defense. I really like this Texans defense a ton. I don't think it... As of like right now, I think they're going to be a top-three defense. They might be my best defense in football. But again, we'll get to that point of the offseason when I will talk about best offenses, best defenses. But another, again, solid underrated linebacker for D'Amico Ryans to get. I don't think he'll be starting opposite Azeez Al-Shaair. I'll quickly look at their depth chart of at least what it says anyways. But yeah, we'll see. Killing time just a little bit here. No, because they have, of course, they have Henry To'o'o'o. But yeah, having EJ Speed as your third linebacker, that's a very nice option. And now let's get into the coaches' meetings here. So obviously coaches' meetings, owners' meetings, and of course we get the infamous coaches' picture. If you don't know what that is, it's just, again, it's like a school picture of all of this year's head coaches. So we got some newcomers with Liam Cohen and Brian Schottenheimer, Kellen Moore. I'm forgetting some old faces coming back with Pete Carroll. And I'm forgetting guys too, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, yada, yada, yada. We keep going. But and with that picture, there's always, because again, in a school picture, people always aren't paying attention or looking their best or they look like you, whatever. There's, you can always just look at a picture of a group of people and you can be like, what's going on there? And that's what something that Barstool Big Cat, that's what Big Cat does every single year. He analyzes the coaches' pictures, points out some things, and I thought it would be fun to do too. So some things I pointed out, Nick Sirianni wearing shorts, the only guy wearing shorts in the picture, something that Andy Reid is known for. And I guess since Sirianni beat him in the Super Bowl, he stole his shorts as well. Brian Callahan just kind of staring off into the distance, not knowing where the camera is, just kind of dreading his existence almost, not knowing what he's going to do at quarterback. I also didn't know who Brian Callahan was, and I think Brian Callahan is the only coach where I was like, who is that? I thought that was who Brian Schottenheimer was at first, and I think that's bad news for Brian Callahan if I look at you and I'm like, ugh. It's like, if I don't know who you are, and there are new coaches you just hired, this is your second year, and I can't still like, oh, that's Brian Callahan. Might be bad for business, might be a bad omen, I don't know. Kyle Shanahan just looks disgusted to be there, just wants to win a Super Bowl so badly. He literally looked disgusted to be there. Brian Daboll, only one wearing Giants apparel, like team-issued apparel, very clear big dude move to be like, ah, I don't have clothes, let me just wear like the stuff that the team gives me all the time. He's also just, he's so much smaller than all of, I don't know why he was put in the back row for the coach's picture, but he's so much smaller than every other coach he was near. It was really funny. I think that's it in terms of like funny things. Kevin Stefanski was wearing a pink shirt, and it's not funny because he was wearing a pink shirt. Just everybody else was wearing kind of like neutral tones or blues, and then Stefanski just popping out with his pink shirt. Dan Campbell's a unit. Dan Quinn also a unit. Yeah, That was the coach's picture. But what stemmed from the coach's picture, actually, I got one more coaching note before we get into these rule changes and such. John Harbaugh gets a 3-year extension from the Ravens. Obviously, well-deserved. The Ravens have been one of the most consistent winning franchises of the century. They got 2 Super Bowls to prove it. I guess that 2000 Super Bowl doesn't really count. Either way, 2 Super Bowls, this, whatever. But a lot of Ravens fans kind of aren't happy about the extension because, like, recently anyways, the playoff appearances have been a lot of... Their losses haven't been pretty, to say the least, where a lot of it's their own doing, self-inflicted errors, bad coaching mistakes, just bad mental mistakes by their players in general, and maybe that's, the coach is not getting them right during practices, or maybe they just have the yips. Maybe a guy like Mark Andrews is just not made for big moments, and I wouldn't personally have him on the roster still, but that's just me. Yeah, the Ravens, like again, you can be mad and like, I don't want John Harbaugh here anymore, but having a coach that you know is a very, very good coach and can win Super Bowls and has won Super Bowls, I would love to have that. Again, I would love to have a coach that's been with my team for a decade plus. That sounds nice. That means that we've been winning. Might mean we win a Super Bowl, might mean we just have some horrible playoff losses, but again, it's better than the existence that I'm in now as a Dolphins fan, so is what it is. And with these rule changes too, obviously the tush push was the big one of contention. Will it get banned? Will it not get banned? Nick Sirianni also said in a press conference where it's like all of the old Eagles guys, Jonathan Gannon, Shane Steichen, Kellen Moore. There's one I'm missing, is there not? No, there's not. It's just those 3 guys. Right? Yeah. Either way, where they would basically be like, you better be on my side for this because the tush push got you your coaching jobs, obviously in jest, but funny from Nick Sirianni to bring that up, but it was a close vote. It was a 50-50 split, 16 versus 16, and to get a vote to pass, you need 24 of the 32 teams to agree with you, so it did not pass. Yeah, I don't know, again, I don't know why you want to ban a play that you're just bad at running. That seems like a team issue error. That's not the Eagles' fault. And a lot of teams were pointing, and the Packers were the ones that started this, of being like, it causes injuries. It causes, again, if you run it not properly, like the Packers did, yeah, maybe you can get some injuries. It hasn't hurt people. And Sean McDermott, who the Bills are the second biggest culprit of using the tush push, and Sean McDermott was on the side of getting it banned because, again, they couldn't run it effectively. Simple as that. And he was like, he was blaming, the data doesn't show that it hurts players, but it might show, and we think it's a risky play regardless. You know what's a risky play in football, Sean McDermott? Playing football. Running between the tackles gets you a better chance at getting hurt than running the tush push. I think I could almost guarantee that. I have, again, don't have the data in front of me, but I'm pretty confident in that. I think it's, again, kind of bullshit, the Sean McDermott, where the Bills are the second most effective team at running it and second most team that uses that play. And he's like, I don't want it in the game anymore. It might hurt people. That's bullshit, Sean. Your team just sucks at running it. Another rule with the laser in the football now, which it's also officially confirmed. I talked about that a couple weeks ago, but yeah, we get lasers in the football now to mark where the ball is. You still would have been short anyways. So you fucked up the tush push and you wanted that banned. And then you got lasers put in football because you ran the tush push poorly and you didn't get the first down. And guess what? Even if a laser was in that football last year, you still wouldn't have got the first down. It's very funny that the Bills, at least this decade anyways, have just been the team that loses and then complains and then the NFL changes the rules for them. I think that's curious. Or it's like, the Chiefs, the NFL's on the Chiefs side. I don't know. The Bills seem to be getting a lot of handout at these owners' meetings during the offseason. I don't know. Next thing up, we get 3 Christmas games. That's cool. Yeah, the NFL's just trying to make Christmas their day. They already have done that. They did it last year. No one cared about the NBA games. They're doing it again, three games on Christmas. I think Christmas is a Thursday, so that means that everyone will get the Friday off, I'm pretty sure, regardless of... I don't know how the holidays work. Either way, I won't complain. I'm just happy that it's not on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday like it was, I think, this year. Thursday's fine. Thursday is a normal football day. It'll be weird when they try to do it on a Wednesday or Tuesday again, but... until then, and then Goodell talks about possibly an 18th NFL game. We'll see. I mean, I think it's just inevitable at this point that it's going to happen. It's been talked about so long, but again, the players just need less preseason games, another bye week. Again, like they do in the CFL, two bye weeks. I think there's more than two bye weeks in the CFL just because there's only nine teams, but yeah. Two bye weeks in the NFL, one less preseason game, boom, you can have your 18th game, and then it works out that everyone would get that Monday off because the, what holiday? It's Family Day for us in Canada. I forget what it is in the States, but either way, then we would have the Monday off after Super Bowl Sunday, and that would be an absolute dream for me. And now we get to the rule changes that actually did happen. Replay assist can now pick up flags for defenseless player, face mask, horse collar, tripping, and then roughing slash running into the kicker. So this is just like stuff that can be easily reviewed. Like, yeah, that wasn't a flag. So it could only be replay assisted if the flag is thrown and it's like, that's not a penalty. And like egregiously not a penalty. So I like that. Takes bad calls out of the game. And again, we've seen, again, people want to complain. It's like, oh, the Chiefs helping the refs helping the Chiefs. But I think it was probably an AFC Championship game with the Chiefs versus the Patriots. And Chris Jones coming down to swat the ball, like missing on like a Brady pass and just hitting him in the shoulder. And that was called a hit to the head on the QB, which again, that would have been picked up. And maybe Mahomes has another Super Bowl and Brady has one less. I don't know if he won that one. I think that would have been the Rams one probably. Either way, I think this is a very good rule to have. I'm in favor of this. That's nice. Touchbacks will now be at the 35 instead of the 30 on kickoffs. I think this makes sense. And I think it's only at the 35 because you can call a touchback still in that like neutral zone where it's not the end zone and it's not where the players lined up, but in that space, I think from the 25-yard line to the end zone, you can still have, you can still fair catch in there, but it would only be at the 25 and not the 35. But basically, they want more returns. The data has shown that this kickoff was way more safe than in previous years. I think concussions were down 43% on the play. I think that's what I read anyways. So it works, and I thought the kickoffs were more dynamic. I thought that the returns were further when they did break it. There was less touchdowns. Actually, the touchdowns were the same amount over the last few years. I just thought there was going to be way more touchdowns, but the yardage totals was up. I thought it was better, but teams still kicked it out of the back of the end zone, which is what we don't want. So their thing is like, okay, well, we'll make a touchback at the 35 then. Maybe that disinterests teams from kicking the ball out of the back of the end zone. I don't know. But now with the way the kickers are kicking the ball too, you only have to go 20 yards, really, get two first downs to be in some kicker's field goal range at this point. Like a guy like Brandon Aubrey, who's pretty good at like 60 yards, like pretty consistent, he can make a high 50s, low 60s kick. Two first downs. And maybe not even two first downs. Maybe it's, oh, third and two, and oh, we're on the 50, though. Or we're on the 57 on the opposing side. Like, Brandon Aubrey can kind of make that kick. It's, yeah, so we'll see. I don't know why you just wouldn't move the kickers back instead and making everything the same, but because the other thing, and I kind of just thought about this while talking about it, but the owners are obviously in favor of more points, more points mean more highlights mean more eyes mean more people interested, and that means more money at the end of the day, where yeah, of course the owners, instead of trying to like fix it for the sake of football, just making the offenses just closer to score, maybe these teams won't have any thoughts of like, yeah, we don't care that we put them on the 30, put them on the 35, we're going to stop them anyways. Maybe that's the logic. Maybe that's just like, fuck the defense. Defense needs help. I don't know. That was a kind of a tinfoil hat thing there. And the other rule change that happened is the overtime rules have now officially been changed again. So the playoff overtime rules where both teams get the ball are now happening in the season. I don't get it in general. Like, again, overtime in the playoffs, it needs to happen. Someone needs to win, and I think that both teams deserve an opportunity to get the ball in a playoff sudden death scenario. Like, that makes sense to me, where in the season, I don't really care. To me, I would much rather have no overtime in the regular season and less wear and tear on my players than playing for a win, where, again, a win is awesome, it means a lot at the end of the year, but a tie is still better than a loss. And I know this kind of sounds like loser talk in general, but I don't know. I would much rather have no overtime personally in the regular season, just have games end in ties. We don't go to overtime that much anyways. And even when we do go to overtime, we sometimes get ties anyways. So we'll see. Again, I don't think this really changed much. I think from, again, a player safety standpoint, it's extra playing time for everybody else, which just sucks. But that's just me. Those are my two thoughts. Couple last-minute things to talk about here, and then we'll get on to the My Guys portion of this. Browns owners Jimmy and Dee Haslam acknowledged today that the team is still recovering from a big swing and a miss on Deshaun Watson, having paid him $230 million guaranteed and traded 3 first-round picks and more. He said, and then Jimmy Haslam said, hold me and Dee accountable. I guess we will see. I'm going to pause. Someone knocked on the door. Okay, I am back. I expected Lucy to bark. She did not bark. Yes, you did so good. Good job, Lucy. Yeah, so the Browns owners admitting that, yeah, signing Deshaun Watson was a bad mistake that set the franchise back for years. And yes, it has. And I don't see owners usually taking like accountability like that, where it's like, yeah, blame me and my wife. We're the ones that got us in this mess, and it sucks for them. Well, it doesn't suck for them. They deserve everything that they got out of signing that man. But nice to see at least some accountability, maybe turning of a page. I don't know. I doubt it. They're still the Browns at the end of the day. Frank Reich is the new Stanford interim head coach. So Frank Reich, who coached Andrew Luck with the Colts, former Colts head coach and Panthers head coach, is now the Stanford interim head coach. And the interim tag is important because they have not made him the official head coach. He's basically just there for a year, and then they'll see how it goes, and then maybe they'll hire someone else, maybe they don't. But Andrew Luck, the GM of Stanford, this is why this is kind of news, but Frank Reich, also NFL news, but yeah, kind of cool to talk about that. Former first-round pick, all-pro Super Bowl champion Devin White has signed with the Raiders. And yes, I use all of those monikers like they do on Twitter, because if you do win a free agent signing this late, it means they are ass. And it's not only the former first-round pick, it's former all-pro, former Super Bowl champion. Devin White gets the trifecta there. Other than Devin White being a name, Devin White is not good at football anymore. He was with the Eagles and the Texans last offseason. Both of them were like, we're good. I guess we'll see. John Spytek, who's the Raiders GM, obviously would have been in the building with the Bucs when they brought in Devin White, so there's that relation there. But yeah, Devin White is a name, and that's all he will be at this point going forward anyways. And then Lenny Krieg signs with the Falcons. If you don't know the name Lenny Krieg, you shouldn't. He is a German kicker who the Falcons just signed for a 3-year deal. Apparently he went perfect at the combine. He was kicking over in Europe, did really well. Young, he can punt, he can do kickoffs. But the bigger news here is they did sign him to a 3-year deal, and that means that the Falcons clearly have enough interest in him to, first of all, give him that long of contract without any experience, and enough worry in their own kicking in Younghoe Koo, I guess. We'll see. I don't know who's going to win that kicking battle. I like Younghoe, but German kicker named Lenny Krieg, kind of cool. But yeah, that's the NFL Weekly Update. I won't go on too long with German kicker news anyways. But yeah, I think we can get on to the My Guys portion of the episode. And like I said at the top, these are my guys. These aren't guys who I all think are going to be studs in the NFL or are again going to be starters. And like these guys who you think will be in the NFL for a long time. Maybe some of them will, maybe some of them won't, but these are guys that just I like for multiple different reasons, and we'll talk about those reasons when we talk about those players. So I think I got 11 guys, might be 10. I think 10's a better number. I'll just say 10, so we'll go with 10. So starting off, I got a trio of Canadian players. Of course, we got to talk about the Canadians going into the NFL, potentially. So we'll start off with Indiana QB Curtis Rourke, obviously brother of BC Lions quarterback Nathan Rourke, who was on the Jags practice squad for a couple years there. But he completed nearly 70% of his passes with 3,000 yards, 29 TDs, and 5 interceptions, all while playing on a partially torn ACL for most of the season at Indiana. They made the college football playoffs. And just, again, playing on a partially torn ACL, very, very hard to do. And Rourke, who rushing is not obviously a part of his game, but in his other seasons, rushed for around 300 yards in, again, all other seasons except this one because of his knee issue. So doesn't give you, again, a big mobility factor, but it definitely hampered him a little bit. It hampers his throwing mechanics, too, where I like Curtis Rourke, mainly because he's Canadian, but playing with a partially torn ACL, you got that dog in you. I like that at the end of the day. I would take Curtis Rourke to be a developmental high-end backup, potentially. Again, I like the dog that he has in him. Speaking of another Canadian quarterback, we have Laurier QB Taylor Eldersma. You might have heard me talk about him before the Senior Bowl early in February, but yeah, Eldersma, I guess it's not CIS anymore, an OUA QB, and I forget what OUA stands for. Either way, he is Canadian University talent anyways, but he is 6'5", around 225. He looks the part. He has the arm talent during the Senior Bowl, during the Senior Bowl game anyways. He had the most impressive throw during that game where, like, again, jaw kind of dropped and it looked like that's an NFL throw. And I watched that full game. That's the only throw from a quarterback where I was like, yep, that dude has it. I don't know what it is, but he has it. And that's Taylor Eldersma. He just turned 23. That's the same age as guys like Shador and like Cam Ward. Like, again, he's young. You pick him late to develop him. And when I look at someone like Eldersma, who clearly has the talents, who clearly fits the profile of a high-level quarterback, yeah, I would much rather take a guy like that in the 6th, 7th round than someone like Tyler Shuck in the 3rd round, maybe, when he's 26 years old, or Curtis Rourke, who I just talked about, who's 25, who might not have the same upside as Eldersma does. Like, I like Taylor Eldersma a lot. A lot of it's because he's Canadian. A lot of it, he did win the, what's it called, the Heck Creighton Award, which is basically the Canadian Heisman. I don't know. He's clearly a kid with talent who just needs to be around NFL coaches in the NFL game just a little bit more. But I just, again, like his upside over a guy like Will Howard, it's night and day. Like Will Howard might be a good backup quarterback, where Taylor Eldersma, again, might not amount to anything, but that's someone who might be a starter. Will Howard will never be a starting quarterback in the NFL, where I think there's maybe a 5-10% chance that Eljersba might be a starting QB. But that's just me anyways. I like the high upside guys at quarterback anyways. And the last Canadian here, we have Alec Iomanner out of Stanford, wide receiver, very good athlete, ran a 4.44 40, had a 38.5-inch vert, 10.7 broad, all at 6'2", 206, so good athlete, good size, pretty good at contested catches, does all the dirty work, not the best route runner, but again, this is a class where, a wide receiver class anyways, where someone like Iomanner, he fits in that like 5 to 15 range at wide receiver, where people like, that's a pretty big disruption. There's a lot of good receivers in this draft, where not as many high-end guys as last year, but the depth is still really good, and this is what I think we're just going to be continually getting from wide receivers in college anyways, is stacked draft classes where you can find someone in the 5th, 6th round who will be an NFL contributor at some point. And I think that Iomanner can do that. Again, it's the guys who have the willingness to compete. He competes. He does the dirty work. This is someone who you just want to have on your team because he doesn't have a big ego. I think a lot of Canadian guys, we don't have big egos. But those are my trio of Canadian guys that I like. Next guy that I want to talk about, it is Kobe Bryant out of Kansas. If you were wondering why I was wearing the Kansas Jayhawks t-shirt, no, it's not because of March Madness, because the Jayhawks disappointed yet again. But no, it is because of Kobe Bryant, and not that Kobe Bryant, obviously, and not that other Kobe Bryant, but cornerback Kobe Bryant out of Kansas, because there was also I don't know if I need to explain my joke, but obviously there's Kobe Bryant, the basketball player, and then there's a Kobe Bryant who plays on the Seahawks. Did I get that right? I might have just got that wrong and have been thinking that... because who... there's Reek Woolen, and they also drafted... I'm pretty sure it's Kobe Bryant a few years ago. Kansas Kobe Bryant, I'll get to you in a second here after I figured this out and if my joke actually did make sense... I did, but unlike Seahawks Kobe and this Kobe and the other Kobe, they all spell their Kobes differently, so that's something. Okay, so back in that Kansas corner, Kobe Bryant, so 6'1", 180, loves to go off the ball, feisty corner. Again, we're going to talk about dudes that have that dog in him. Kobe Bryant has multiple dogs in him. He is ferocious, he is a willing tackler, and he is a crazy shit-talker. The stories that Brett Coleman and EJ Snyder were telling on the Bootleg Football podcast, if you want actually, like, concrete, like, these guys are dude, like, actual football analysis instead of just being, like, vibes are good, that guy's a dude, I like him, go listen to their stuff. But they were basically telling Kobe Bryant at the Shrine Bowl, who had a, he had a very good Shrine Bowl, one of the clear standouts, but he was shit-talking so much, and he got in some of these wide receivers' heads where by day three, he was just shutting everyone down. And again, he is talented. He has the talent. He has the ball skills. He's a very good zone corner. Might not have like the raw athleticism, but I don't know. The ability to get in your opponent's head and just rattle them, that is a skill that I value, and I don't know whether he'll be able to be a full-time starter, but if you're looking for a corner on day three, I think Kobe Bryant is a guy that teams should be going after. Next guy here, we have Desmond Watson, defensive tackle out of Florida. Now, I'm going to say some numbers here, and might not be great. 5'9", 5'40", 25-inch vert, a 6'1 broad. 36 reps on the bench press, though, which was more than any other player at the combine this year. I think the top end was 33 there. So he was the strongest player in the bench. 1.45 RAS out of 10. That is 1,629 out of 1,904 since 1987. However, he put up all those numbers at 6'6", 146. That's right, you heard me. Desmond Watson is 6'6", 146. And I talked about him during one of my college football recaps of Florida having this massive defensive tackle, and they listed him at 400 pounds. He is 464. And first of all, he's just one of my dudes because he's that big. And I'll be honest, those numbers at almost 500 pounds, those are freakishly athletic numbers. Like, I probably run a 5'9", like, I'm probably close to that. I weigh 200 pounds less than that dude. That is crazy. 25-inch vert, I don't even know how to begin to understand how you can jump. Again, that's not really jumping that high, but he's jumping 2 feet off the ground, and he's 500 pounds. That's crazy. The broad, I really don't know what to, and obviously he's strong. People could argue maybe he could be a little bit stronger at that size, but this is someone who, I don't know, you draft in the seventh, maybe he's a UDFA, and you just put him on the field on third downs, and pretty hard to move that guy, pretty hard to just get him out of the way in general, and clearly he's strong enough, clearly he has NFL strength, maybe, again, maybe he can just lose 60, 70 pounds, get into the high 390s, then maybe you have an NFL player. I have no idea, but at that size, you have to be one of my guys. Desmond Watson, freakishly huge. And hey, we're looking for counters to the tush push, which is still hanging around. Maybe the guy who's 6'6", almost 500 pounds, maybe he can help stop it. I don't know. We will see. Either way, a guy that big, got to have him on my guys list, and I've got the exact inverse of him now, and no, this isn't Tez Johnson, who, again, there's like a 300-pound difference between the two of them, but no, this is Willie Lampkin out of North Carolina, guard, 5'10", 270, I will be back, but yeah, okay, I'm back, let Lucy outside. Willie Lampkin, guard, 5'10", 270, just another thing that just doesn't make any sense in terms of NFL size and prospect and whatever. But again, I talk about these guys who, they got that dog in him. Willie Lampkin has so many highlights out there of him pancaking people, putting them on his back. And obviously, he has the leverage. He is 5'10". He can get under almost anyone. There was a clip of him at the Senior Bowl this year going against Kentucky's Deion Walker, and if you don't know who Deion Walker is, he's around, I think, 6'7", 330-ish, something like that. Willie Lampkin just stopped him right in his tracks, on a one-on-one, too, where all Deion's goal is just to get by Willie, get through him, and no, even with a 9-inch height advantage and 70 pounds heavier, Willie Lampkin held his own, and there are continuous clips of him holding his own versus talented guys, versus guys who might be better more athletically, but Willie's just hanging in there, and I don't know what he does at an NFL level. Like, I can make the jokes that, oh, Desmond Watson can be the tush-push stopper. Willie Lampkin, I have no idea. People have joked about maybe he can be a fullback. His athletic testing wasn't the best, though, to indicate that maybe if he like drops like a few pounds and like builds up like that, the athletic testing wasn't really there. Swing tackle, obviously he's 5'10", and but like, I don't know, Willie Lampkin's just a football player, and it sucks because if he was 6'3", 310 or 6'2", 210, he might be a first round pick, but 5'10", 270, that is just too much of an outlier at the end of the day. Again, the tape is there. The highlights of him stopping these bigger dudes, it's awesome. I love Willie Lampkin. We'll see. Again, I think he will get a training camp invite at the least. But hey, Willie, come to the CFL. Come play for the Red Blacks. I would love to see what he could do in the CFL against some of the talent there. But Willie Lampkin, one of my guys. Okay, this is where we get into some of the more real prospects, guys who will probably get taken day one or day two, and I'm ramping this up, so we're going to go with the day two guys first. So, starting off with Harold Fannin Jr. out of Bowling Green, had the, quite literally, the best season a tight end has ever had in NCAA history. Broke the tight end's yards record, broke the receptions record, and he finished with 117 catches for 1,555 yards and 10 touchdowns on the year for Bowling Green. Clearly a very good football player. Where the issues come with Harold Fannin is, because from a production standpoint, he has all the juice. From a size standpoint, it's also kind of there. 6'3", 240, little bit on the undersized end, but like, okay, like it is what it is. The athletic testing was fine, didn't blow you away. It wasn't like so underwhelming where it's like, okay, we get it now. He's just an awkward body type, awkward runner. He has very, very long legs. Like the body proportion and shape, it's not typical of what you see of like NFL athletes, but kind of like Willie Lampkin, this dude can just play football and wants to play football. Again, not the best blocker, but he's putting in 100% effort trying to put these dudes on his ass, like on their ass, which is great. He makes contested catches. He makes highlight catches. He gets open in space. He can make people miss. It's just none of the numbers and none of the stuff. It just shows that Harold Fannin is an outlier, maybe. But again, this is a guy who is a football player, and people smarter than me will be able to take a player like Harold Fannin, put them into their offense, and use him effectively. Whether that be at tight end, maybe at fullback, H-back, I have no idea. Harold Fannin will be an NFL player and will be an NFL player for a long time because he's just a damn good football player. I don't know if he's a damn good tight end, but he is a damn good football player at the end of the day. And honestly, I kind of compare him to Travis Kelce. And no, that's not a ceiling, oh my god, he can be one of the best tight ends of all time. No, I'm comparing him to a 35-year-old Travis Kelce. I'm comparing him to current-day Travis Kelce, where, hey, tries hard, still a good blocker, average good blocker, whatever, and gets open, and even if he's not the fastest, not the most agile anymore, he makes people miss. And I don't know, I would have 35-year-old Travis Kelce on my team as a 21-year-old. Like, again, I don't think Harold Fannin is ever going to hit those highs that Travis Kelce ever had. It's crazy for me to compare any tight end prospect to someone who might be Travis Kelce. But if you're telling me a 21-year-old player is as good and his ceiling could be 35-year-old Travis Kelce, I like that a lot. Harold Fannin, I think, is just a good football player at the end of the day. Ends up being one of my guys. Next guy up here, we have Jordan Birch out of Oregon. Big, big DN, 6'4", 279. I talked about him being one of my guys to watch at the Combine. He didn't disappoint. He ran a 4.67. Unfortunately, didn't do the agility or the broad or vertical jumps either, which is unfortunate, but I just know he's a good athlete. And that 4.67 at that size is very, very good. And I talked about him having a 34-yard fake punt block run where if you were telling me that that guy was 280 pounds running the football like that, I'd be scared. So missed some games with injury this year. He was still productive. I think 9.5 sacks on the year. Close to 12 tackles for loss. Again, I just think that Birch, if you want someone with the athletic raw tools that can develop into a full-time starter on day two, like I'm thinking that Jordan Birch will probably be, I mean, in my rankings, it would be late day two, early day three, but I think that consensus-wise, he's probably towards mid-day three, or mid-round three to late round three, where if you can get a guy who, yeah, he has that athletic ability and also has some really good stuff on tape, I like it a lot. Jordan Birch, again, helps, he's from Oregon. That's my school. Not my actual school, but like, that's the college I cheer for, because like the Dolphins, their uniforms got me early. But at least Oregon doesn't disappoint me year after year. I would like to see them win a national championship, but that's probably not going to happen. We'll see, though. And next guy up, Now, these are my first round guys, starting off with right tackle Armin Membu out of Missouri. Again, 6'4", 332, and he joined Tristan Wirfs, Trent Williams, and also Will Campbell as the only offensive lineman to run a sub-540, have a 30-plus-inch vert at 315-plus. And again, he's 12 pounds heavier than the second heaviest guy. He is a freak athletically, and I don't think a lot of people knew that about Membu. I definitely didn't, but he is someone who has quickly risen up the draft boards where I think when I first really started getting into the draft for this cycle, which would have been like at the start of the new year, Membu was someone who people were talking about as like, oh yeah, like maybe a potential like first round tackle. There was obviously a lot of other guys still in the consideration, and just he has just gone. It's like maybe a round one pick. And since January, when he's maybe a round one pick, in the last 2 months, he has gone from maybe a round one pick to he might be the first offensive lineman taken off the board. He is the favorite to be the first offensive lineman taken off the board. And I don't blame anyone. His tape at right tackle, again, athletic. He's got the size. He is an ass kicker. He puts people on the ground. This is exactly who you should want on your offensive line. And he has all the athletic tools. He compares to some of these great offensive line prospects. The issue that some people might bring up with Membu is he's a right tackle. He played right tackle at Missouri. People were like, oh, maybe he kicks into the guard, but he is a right tackle. Doesn't mean he can't play left tackle. It just means he hasn't done it. So that is the worry, but hell, you look at someone like Tristan Wirfs, who they have that comparable. They have that, oh, only the whatever with the sub-540, the 30-inch for yada, yada, yada. Wirfs also strictly a right tackle at his time in Iowa, gets drafted by the Buccaneers. They stick him at right tackle. And then eventually, we're like, hey, can you make the switch for us? He made the switch seamlessly. And it's a hard thing to do, but I think Membu has the talent. Again, I think ideally you start him at right tackle immediately, but he can do it. He's a very good, my favorite tackle in the class. Again, I made it clear that Will Campbell, favorite offensive lineman, but Armin Membu, favorite tackle in the class for sure. Next guy up here, we have Tyler Warren, tight end out of Penn State, 6'6", 260. Also, I should have mentioned when I was talking about Harold Fannin Jr., Tyler Warren is the one who won the John Mackey Award winner for best tight end in college. He had a really good year, 104 catches, 1,233 yards, 8 TDs, but also had 218 yards on the ground, which is crazy, 4 TDs there. But maybe the guy who should have broken, who broke all of the tight end records, maybe he should have won best tight end in college. I don't know. I digress. Tyler Warren obviously deserved it, and he's one of my dudes. So I don't disagree that he deserved it. But Tyler Warren to me is, again, that throwback. I really hope that you can't hear Lucy drinking right now, but I'm not going to judge her because she needs to be drinking water right now. So I want to ramble because this might be something that I clip out for the podcast, and I don't want lapping up water sounds in the background if this is something that I think I nail with Tyler Warren and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just getting the hype going for Tyler Warren right now. Just getting you excited for what could he possibly say about Tyler Warren. And ooh, I thought I could ramble a little bit better. Yes, your water was good, Lucy. Good girl. So, Tyler Warren, truly a throwback tight end where, yeah, he can do all that receiving stuff, but he is a blocker. Like, you can put him in line. You can put him in line confidently from week one onward, where a lot of the other tight ends, where they're capable blockers, but Tyler Warren is someone who you feel comfortable and comfortable early having him go against linebackers and other edge players to help out on the offensive line. And I think that's a big help because as on top of being an absolute weapon on offense, he's a good blocker and he's an ass kicker. Again, physical player. And I think that that's one of my traits is, first of all, I love size, pause, but physical players who are just football dudes at the end of the day. And that's Tyler Warren. He is an absolute football dude. Someone who I think Ben Johnson just said when they were going over film with some of the prospects that defense coordinator Dennis Allen was basically like, this is someone who I have to make a game plan for whenever we play because Tyler Warren is that useful of a player, especially when you can line him up in the backfield at running back, at fullback. You can move him. This is if Harold Fannin Jr. had NFL like size and wasn't some lanky, long-legged, again, still really good player, but Tyler Warren's that guy. Tyler Warren is absolutely awesome, and I compared him early on in the process to this is just like, if Taysom Hill was actually a good tight end, and not just kind of like a gadget role player guy. And that's what he could be. And again, Taysom Hill's only 6'2", where maybe Harold Fannin is Taysom Hill. I had a hotter take that I actually think that Jalen Milroe would be very good in a Taysom Hill type role. Maybe I'll get into that a little more. I doubt I will, but Tyler Warren, again, he can do all the stuff that a regular tight end does. You can put him in line to block. He can do all the yak catches, make contested catches, run guys over. But then, yeah, you can line him out of the backfield, at fullback, at running back, at wildcat. He even had a touchdown pass, 35-yard touchdown pass. Absolutely awesome. Tyler Warren, jack-of-all-trades player, a top-10 player for me in this draft class easily. He's so much fun, and again, people comparing him to Brock Bowers, that's a little crazy. I saw, and a comp that I do like is Kyle Rudolph. Again, Kyle Rudolph, that old school style of player. He is a Hall of Very Good nominee, one-time nominee anyways, but like I think Kyle Rudolph is, he was just, unfortunately had some injuries early on in his career, and no quarterback for the Vikings was good, and obviously they had Adrian Peterson, so all they wanted to do was run the ball anyways, but like, I think that Tyler Warren is just going to be a damn good, productive NFL tight end. I don't know if he will hit the heights of getting like 1,100-yard seasons and whatnot, but someone who is just very solid, again, will have a 10-year-plus career, I think, no problem in the league. And finally, the number one, my guy, going fully chalk with this, it's Travis Hunter. And I can say that he's my number one player on my big board and someone who I, again, going into draft season, I was like, I don't know if Travis Hunter is my number one wide receiver or even my number one corner. And now he's both. Travis Hunter is, we have known that name for 4 years now, ever since he came out of high school, declared to Florida State as the number one player in the country. And then Deion Sanders comes and poaches him to small, like Jackson State, which again, it's never happened, but Deion with the promise of being like, you will be a legend, has made Travis Hunter a legend. And that's all he's done. He has played both sides of the ball. He has gotten better every single year. And we want to talk about like, oh, that 23 tape compared to Travis Hunter's 24 tape. It's night and day. He's a much, much better corner now. He's a much better wide receiver now. And obviously it helps. He has Deion Sanders guiding him along the way through every step, especially for the corner play. And there's the debate of, oh, I would much rather have Travis Hunter at wide receiver. And people being like, wide receivers get paid more. So like, of course, Travis Hunter should just play wide receiver. He's going to play both. There is no doubt in my mind he will play both positions in the NFL. Will it work out? I don't know. But regardless, you can get a wide receiver one and a corner one in one pick in the NFL draft this year, and that's just because Travis Hunter is that special of a player. I don't know if we will ever see a Travis Hunter-type player again in the league. Maybe this starts a new thing where kids being like, I want to play both sides of the ball. It's very hard to do. Even guys in college don't do it full-time, and guys who did it pretty well in college, like, I guess, Champ Bailey, when they get to the NFL, they're like, no, I'm strictly playing corner. He's different. He just is. And I'm sad he didn't do his athletic testing, because I think that his athletic testing numbers would have been freaky, but to me, at the end of the day, I think Travis Hunter, if you were going to make him pick, I think he'd pick corner. I mean, I don't think that a guy who picked Deion Sanders to be his mentor through this entire stretch, where he has been working with one of the best corners to ever play the game, would be like, no, I'm a wide receiver. I think that Travis Hunter is a wide or is a cornerback in his soul at the end of the day. That doesn't mean he isn't also a damn good wide receiver. Again, the best receiver in the 2025 NFL draft class. It's just, it's so insane what he's doing, what he did. The fact that there was even talk during his Heisman season last year at Colorado that he was an average wide receiver and an average corner, and the only reason why he's getting the recognition is just because of snap count. That's insane to me. Travis Hunter is so special, and we are lucky to be able to witness a player like this, because I don't know if it's going to happen again. And I hope that he ends up with a team like the New York Giants or like the Patriots. I think that's he will be a top four pick. That's the furthest he will fall. I don't think he will be there for the Jags. But the reason I like the Giants and the Patriots fits for him is he will not have to be the guy on either defense or offense for these teams, where on offense for the Giants, they have Malik Nabers. Boom, Travis Hunter can be your number two receiver, and maybe, hey, you want him as your wide receiver three? That's fine, put him in, whatever. And then at corner, they got Paulson Adebo, and they drafted Deontay Banks, who did have an up-and-down year, but you can rely on, okay, Travis Hunter can be my number one corner with Paulson Adebo, who is very, very good, and we still have a young Deontay Banks who we want to get better, while being my number 2-3 wide receiver on offense and limit maybe his snaps on offense. I like that. To me, Travis Hunter in his first year needs to be full-time on one side of the ball and 10 to 20 snaps on the other side of the ball. I think that that's a healthy start to his NFL career. And on the Patriots inverse, it would on the Patriots side, it would be the inverse, where he would play wide receiver. He would be their wide receiver one. Obviously, they have Diggs, but Travis Hunter would be their wide receiver one. And then on defense, they have Christian Gonzalez, who is already top five corner in the NFL, and they just signed Carlton Davis, who is a damn good corner too, where they can do the opposite. We're being like, you're playing all the snaps on offense, and on defense, they can have him come in for certain packages to be like, okay, Travis, that's your guy. Cover him. Like, that's, again, like, man coverage assignments. Defense is obviously, like, there's so much going on, but being a corner where you can just be told, go man up on that guy, he can do that. There's not a lot of, like, studying that needs to go in, and obviously he's going to be putting equal time, probably, studying film and tape and whatever on both sides of the ball, as he was doing at Colorado. Obviously, it's going to be more of an elevated scale, but those are the two spots that I think are best for him, where he will get an ability to shine, but not shine on both sides of the ball, but not be, because I think if Travis Hunter wants, and if someone, and if some team will let him, they will let him play both sides of the ball fully, where, again, I think a team like the Browns, if they pick him at two, which is definitely in consideration, they would put him at wide receiver one or maybe wide receiver two next to Judy or whatever, but he would be on offense full time. And then, yeah, corner number one or corner number two next to Denzel Ward, but he will still play the majority of the snaps on both sides, which I don't think that he should do. Same for the Jags. He would be wide receiver two on the Jags, but he'd be corner number one, where I think that they would still use him majority of the time on both sides of the ball, where I think he needs to adapt to the NFL game first for at least a year, playing one position fully with him mixing in a decent amount on whatever either side. It might be offense or defense. But I worry about a team like the Browns picking him, just because the Browns just, they don't pick good players usually, and they're a cancer of a franchise that, of course, if Travis Hunter would go there, he would be a bust. But I don't know. I think the Giants and the Patriots are the safest spots for him, but he's just such a fun player. He's so good, and I get to talk about him a little bit more here. So those are my guys. I'll probably put it on a list to post on Instagram, but those are my guys for the draft. yeah, if you have any thoughts, let me know. But we will get to the one... Well, I mean, there's lots of bad NFL takes that are out, but the one that I found is the most fun to talk about, at least right now anyways. It's Hank Lockwood. So Hank Lockwood from Pardon My Take, their former producer, and now he just plays golf and goes on vacation a lot. But he said that Travis Hunter is doing and did at Colorado is more impressive than what Shohei Ohtani is doing slash has done, which... Nope, that's just dead wrong. I don't know. Again, just flat out dead wrong. Shohei Ohtani is, first of all, he's doing it in the pros and doing something that no one thought that anyone would be able to do again, which is pitch and bat while being, again, he's one of, like, on top, I don't watch enough baseball, but I'd say, yeah, top two hitter in the league. And I'd probably a top 10 pitcher when he's healthy, and he's not healthy right now. But no one can do that. And he's so good at both sides of the ball, where Travis Hunter did in college. If he does it at the NFL, if he becomes a pro bowler on both sides of the ball, like an all-pro on both sides of the ball, then I might concede the point where I think what Travis Hunter is doing is more impressive than what Shohei's doing. But at right now... I don't care that Travis Hunter won the Heisman. Shohei has won MVPs. He has been in consideration. Has Shohei won a Cy Young? See, this is the thing. I don't know about baseball. So, Shohei Ohtani. I don't think he won a Cy Young. I think he was close, but... blah, blah, blah. No, he has not won a Cy Young, but he's still a very good pitcher. He's a damn good pitcher, and he's won... A couple MVPs now? Three-time MVP. Three-time MVP Shohei Ohtani. Doing it on both sides. And again, at the pro level. If Travis Hunter, again, if he can become an all-pro, pro bowler on both sides of the ball, conversation can be made. I think playing corner is the second hardest position in the NFL. Playing wide receiver, also really hard, really skillful. And... tackling slash getting tackled for an entire game versus the wear and tear in baseball, not really there. Obviously, pitching kills your shoulder and elbow and all of those ligaments, but let's get Travis Hunter to the pros. Let's make him a good pro, and then maybe he can be a good pro or a great pro on both sides of the ball. Shohei has proven he can do that. He can bat, he can pitch, and he's great, phenomenal at both. Travis Hunter's proven in college he has a ways to go before they can even be comparable, and then a debate can be had. But as of right now, it's a ridiculous bad take to have. So that's the bad take of the week. Yeah, that'll do it. Bit of a longer episode here. Had a couple delays with Lucy being, you know, oh, look at those sad eyes. Yeah, hi. I won't bother you. Yeah, a couple distractions from my lovely dog, but... I gotta go cook dinner. I got a new job today, potentially. I think I'm like 90% sure. I will find out tomorrow, which is technically today. But pretty sure I got the job. But probably maybe talk about more of that next week. I don't know. Yeah, next week, though, will kind of be my overview of the draft class in general. Lots of fun guys to talk about. Lots of depth things to talk about. Should be a good one. And then we will be into mock draft, my final one. Yeah, as always, if you have liked this, please like, share, retweet, subscribe, all that fun stuff, and until next time, peace.